leaders across our country. The question is that we need to both capacitate them organizationally, and so we already have learnerships and interns in that, and Google will touch on that to a certain extent. But we also want to make sure that there is capacitation of traditional leaders to really understand what local government is and reduce some of the tensions that exist at a municipal level there. The third area that we've said is around building worker leadership in our country. And historically, LG CETA really focused on just somewhere in the market. It's a closed shop in that sense. And we've said we've got to move away from that to build worker leadership. We've got to have shop stewards who themselves understand the sector very well. And so we're encouraging, and we have great support from some of the Matu leaders there, that we build worker leadership programs at a municipal level that will take us forward there. The fourth area is around management training itself. Obviously starting with finance, technical services, municipal offices and the like. Because again, some of the analysis we've done, if you look at our municipalities across the country, for example, in this city that we're here in Cape Town, we would have more planners or more professionals in the built environment in this municipality than in the whole of the Western Cape put together, including probably even the Western Cape provincial government. Now, the same thing is true in Johannesburg vis-a-vis Gauteng as a whole, or in eThekwini vis-a-vis KwaZulu-Natal. How do we begin to make sure that where we have weaker management, how we actually build that level there? The fifth area is what we call special projects, and those we've started identifying. If you go to a province like Limpopo, for example, you would have Steelport, which is a mine that is now out of action, with a community that is devastated, poverty-stricken. But on the other hand, you have Mogalakwena, which is a municipality that has to deal with Anglo-American's biggest and most significant mine there. How do you deal with that challenge, which is quite specific, and you've got to deal with declining mining towns, but other mining towns that are very strong? The whole Pakisa strategy around the marine economy, there are issues there that need to be dealt with specific emphasis. And we call that special projects, particular bursaries, etc. And last but certainly not least, one of the things we're doing internally, but we're saying needs to be done across all CETAs. As a former municipal manager myself, what's very frustrating is that you get CVs coming to you where someone's got one degree and they've got 50 CETA courses, none of which are worth anything really. They're how you can use Excel, etc., which shouldn't even appear on someone's CV if you're applying for management positions. How do we make sure that we, across the country, make sure that everyone who's trained is on a single national database so we can look at who the service providers were that are doing that training, secondly, who got trained and what they got trained in, and begin to then review the impact? Because while we don't have any problems with the department as a whole, one of the issues the board keeps raising is that we're not looking enough at impact. We're looking a lot at these performance. Have we actually got these numbers done? Have we done 3,000 learnerships or whatever, rather than saying what the impact that has actually been at the municipal level. So where we come from as a board is around those issues. We're trying to argue that we've got to begin to look at impact, and it's got to be national at that level. Google's going to take you through the content of the board, but certainly from the board, delighted with the management team, because in the end it's their responsibility to both knock the board into shape but make sure that they're delivering. But I think that over the past 2 years, the 18 months that we've been in, we believe they've done outstanding work there.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for inviting us this morning. I'm just going to focus much more on the work that we have done post the administration period, because I think that is very critical to understanding the work that the LG CETA was faced with. When we took over from the administrator in 2015, we were already in the middle of the financial year, and we had to take on what was already planned and see how far we can go with that. So there were a number of areas that we needed to review and shape and make sure that it is aligned with the direction that we were taking. So what we presented to the board was what we called a crossover plan, which was designed to really review the way that the organization was performing, both internally and externally. And that became our turnaround strategy, and it consisted of a number of components. one of the components internally related to how we were dealing with our finance function in the organization, which was at the time outsourced. So we took a decision through the board that we would insource that, and we have capacitated that division. We've got a very able young man leading our finance division. He's here, Lwazi Kuse. He is now driving our finance division, and we are seeing a lot of turnaround in terms of the way that he is operating, including the fact that we are we've been having an unqualified report since he joined us. We also had to look at our internal audit function, which was also outsourced. We have again insourced that and made sure that we've got the capacity. We've just appointed our head of internal audit a few weeks ago, and he's doing a brilliant job, and we are pleased with where we are. And then we also had to look at historically the projects that we have been implementing and how those projects are impacting in the greater local government space. And we've had to withdraw some of the projects that we felt, as the chairman is saying, are not actually having the impact that we want. They were just projects that were designed for us to meet a number. So we've gone and reviewed a lot of those programs and restructured them, and had conversations with our municipalities to make sure that they are aligning their projects with the greater good of what we're trying to do. I mean, fundamental for us, because we are responsible for a sphere of government, building skills in a sphere of government, we are in a phase of building the nation at a local government level. As the chairperson was saying, so we have to build from the councillor right down to the cleaner to make sure that everybody is aligned to the direction that is in place in terms of the national development plan, as well as in terms of the provincial growth and development strategy, and the sectors that each province is designing for itself as a contribution to the national development plan. So it is important that our WSPs that we receive from municipalities are reviewed in the context of the bigger picture. So we are in the building, in the process of building, and some of the uncomfortable conversations that we have to have is that sometimes when a municipality is presenting a project that is not aligned with the direction overall of where the nation is going, we actually have to turn down some of those projects and advise them to look at alternative projects. Fourthly, Chair, we also had to look internally within the organization at some of the internal systems. We did not have a performance management system at the LG CETA. It just never existed. We also had great disparities in terms of salaries within the organization. So we had to take a view to say, are we going to delay the correction to the later years, or are we going to do the correction immediately? So we've gone to the board, requested the correction to be done in the past financial year, which was achieved. And I am pleased to say that due to that intervention, our relations within the organization are much more improved now than they have been historically. We've also putting in place a new ethos in the organization where we are emphasizing to our staff that even though we are a state-owned enterprise, if you like, we still are given the responsibility of serving the nation. We are supposed to be serving the nation and making sure that we have service excellence. So we have implemented a service turnaround of 48 hours within the organization. Any external party who wants us to do anything in the organization, we make sure that within a 48-hour period, we turn around that response across the organization. We are obviously not achieving that 100% at the moment, but certainly we are trying our best to make sure that the turnaround is achieved. Chair, maybe a quick overview also during our administration period in terms of our performance and where we are at the moment. Under the administration period, actually, and ironically, our performance wasn't that bad. It was sitting at 83%. As of the end of the administration period, but it was the internal processes that were just very tedious, which we had to clean up in the past 24 months. And this year, which is the 2016-2017 financial year, is the first year post the administration period where the management team that is in front of you has actually taken responsibility for putting in place the APP, the strategic plan, as well as the sector skills plan. And we have said to the board, this is the first year that really we were taking responsibility for everything, because everything that is in the document has been prepared by ourselves as the new team. And we are pleased to say we have reached in the last past year a performance of So, you know, we're going to address the other areas where we have not performed as well. Because we're preaching this gospel in municipalities of being transparent, of being service-oriented, we also need to do that as an organization. So we have to lead by example. So you would see in the presentation, Chair, that we've identified those areas where we have not done particularly well in. It is surprising, I'm sure, to many of the members that we have not done well, for instance, in the area of the unemployed. Now, the reason why that has happened is predominantly because we are playing in what we call the political space at local government level. There is sometimes interests that are conflicting and preventing, if you like, us from really raising the number of the unemployed because of the political games that sometimes are played at that local level. However, what the chairperson has done in the last month during March and April, we have been going to each of the provinces and meeting with mayors as well as the municipal managers and the heads of human resources across the nation to just make sure that there is alignment in terms of what we are trying to achieve and that the mandate of the CETAs is for both the employed and unemployed. So that's an area that we definitely are wanting to address going forward and that we hope that our municipalities are going to accept the changes that we are doing. We also haven't done very well on the learnership, but our number is better than it was in the past year. We're sitting at a delivery of 76%, which for us is not acceptable. We also haven't done well on the adult education and training. Predominantly, we believe now that we've analyzed the information that one of the reasons has to do with the way that the program has been designed. It doesn't attract a stipend as well. So what we've done is we are in the process of reviewing that and making sure that it is aligned with the direction that we want to take going forward and making sure that our adult education learners are not just doing that program but also are linked to other programs that will interest and assist them. I'm passing through quickly, Chairperson, because I don't want to talk about each and every area. But we also have done relatively well in terms of the RPL program, not as well as we wanted, particularly in terms of preparing the documentation and ensuring that we prepare the sector for the RPL program. It has been running very slowly, but we are hoping that in due course we will be increasing that number going forward. From our audit outcomes during administration, we had a qualified opinion, 2012 and 13. In 2015 and 16, as I indicated earlier, we did not have any qualification on that. From a budget point of view, Chairperson, we also, like the energy CETA, are not sitting with billions of rands. We have a budget that is just under 500 million, and we are believed doing a relatively good job in spending that money and aligned with the direction that we want to take. And you would see that, and we've just analyzed the number of employees that are sitting at a municipal level, about 310,000 of them. Within the MTF process, we believe that we would have reached at least 41% of those employees. And within 6 years, we would have definitely have reached about 80% of municipal employees through our interventions and our programs. So that is very exciting for us, and that is why we're spending more time on building the actual skills. We don't have any spare money to be using or applying to building any infrastructure or centers and things like that. We are focusing, we have to focus on the human being that is delivering the services in the municipal area across the board. As the chairperson was indicated in terms of our strategic areas. We have increased, Chair, our support, particularly for our bursary programs. The chairperson of the board instructed us to review and think about how we're responding to the Students Must Fall initiative, I mean Fees Must Fall initiative, and what we've done is we've increased that allocation quite significantly, as you would see on slide 34. In that regard, and we have reached a peak at the moment of 700 students that we have offered bursaries against a target of about 220. That is our normal target that gets given by the department, but we have decided to just up that as much as we can. So So, Chair, in terms of the areas that we still need to really improve on that we have not really done well in, is that we really need to make sure that we implement a performance management ethos across the organization. We've started to roll that out. I'm visiting each of the provinces that we have. Incidentally, we now have a presence in all the provinces. We're just waiting for Mpumalanga office to open in the next few weeks. So instead of just being operating in 5 provinces, we definitely now are having a presence across the nation to make sure that we are delivering on our mandate. We also are reviewing the way we are remunerating our staff, aligning that process with the performance management system so that there is synergy in terms of that, and then we are streamlining our operations. And the reason we've had to streamline our operations is that we have, part of the reason we haven't reached our 100% delivery is that we have always waited for the municipalities to submit proposals to us in terms of the discretionary grant process. But what we have done now is that we've also allowed them to give us the space for us to directly intervene where we see that a particular municipality is not delivering in terms of service delivery. So we've got our own national teams that go out and assist municipalities, especially those that are struggling, to make sure that they are submitting the documents on time. And you'd be pleased to know, Chairperson, that in the past 2 years, we've also had 100% delivery of work skills plans across the nation. Every municipality has submitted their plan across the nation. What we are now doing in terms of operations is that we are aligning those WSPs together with the direction, as I indicated earlier, of linking that to the IDP, and also within the IDP, linking that to the municipal human resource strategy of the municipality, which is why we are spending a lot more time in the provinces and speaking to the leadership just to make sure that there is alignment in terms of the direction that we're taking, but in particular in terms of the critical and soft skills in relation to the sectors that each of the provinces has identified for itself within the context of the National Development Plan. In terms of the plans ahead, Chair, I'm just going to touch on the goals quickly because I think we've addressed the areas that we need to focus on going forward. We've reduced the number of programs. Under the administration, we had 5 programs. The governance pillar was also a program in itself, but we've taken that out given the strengthening of the governance now that we have in place, and we've combined that with administration. So we now have only 4 programs, but our goals is really what we are focusing on because, as I said earlier, we are in the business of building the nation at the bottom, and we need to make sure that we are doing our bit in making that happen. Sometimes it's not easy because you have to deal with both the political leadership and administration, but we believe that we are making inroads in terms of that. So we definitely have to make sure that our leadership is capacitated and also our administrative component is also administrated, skilled appropriately. And then the governance within the municipalities is very important. We're doing that with the COCTA as well as National Treasury. National Treasury has taken a bit of time to assist us with the financial competence skills base that we're trying to build, but we're hoping that in the year under review, we will strengthen that relationship. In terms of deliver on the leadership, particularly on our union leadership, as the Chairperson was saying, we're also just extending the training in that area, not just to the union leaders, which are your shop stewards, but we are increasingly asking them to push for recognition of prior learning as part of their program, so that their members also can accelerate and ascend within the organization or the municipalities and get better jobs so that there is proper delivery on the ground and we give and expose opportunities to those people that would not otherwise have opportunity going forward. We also are building this year a much more stronger stakeholder management strategy. We have been going to provinces and meeting with the different municipalities through the skills development facilitators and also through the offices of the mayor and the municipal managers. However, this year, we believe that we need to do much more, particularly with the human resource divisions within each of the municipalities to just support where we can, particularly in the portfolios, in the finance portfolio, in the technical services, as well as in the office of the municipal manager. So, Chair, our programs, as I indicated, have been reduced to 4, and we hope delivery. Once we put in place a proper performance management system and we align that with our remuneration plan, which is currently what we're doing, as well as ensuring that our board strategic focus areas are now part of our normal operations, I think next year we'll probably post a better performance than we have done in the current year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much to the committee. By really with you as our leadership that really straddles the country as a whole, that you also assist us in this process. You all visit constituency offices, your municipalities, and it would really help us if you're saying to your mayors, your municipal managers, the difficulty we have, many of the SDFs, we call them the skill development facilitators, who work in the municipalities, they're often in relatively junior positions, which is fine. We're not arguing that they should be more senior, but they develop strategies that have to be signed off by the managers, by the trade unions there. What we find is very few mayors and managers, maybe it's not very few, but they're not that many, mayors and managers even know what that strategy is. And we're really saying they've got to be much more intimately involved in that if we're going to capacitate this sector there. So we would raise that as part of your assistance in this program. But thank you very much.
Indeed, thank you very much. I take it there's no additions that are being made. I was looking forward to listening to the young finance person, but you didn't offer that opportunity.
It's just asking a question. I often complain because he's not only a brilliant man of the finances, but he has a tendency in our board meetings to give very long sermons to us about how we've got to keep things in order. So,
that's good. Okay, honourable members, questions over to yourselves. I see hands from this way. I'll end there.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me welcome all the presentations. There were five information. To start with the services sector, well, it is commendable that you receive. It's quite commendable that you receive a clean heart, that this step is a positive message in the background of CTS having had problems in the past. And everybody sees them as cash cows. So, for us to hear that there are people who are doing well and getting clean audit is quite good. But then, what is quite concerning to me is the low level of education of employees, 139, whatever the case may be. But I'd like to know, what are they doing in the organization? How are these people this organization? You also spoke of improving the quality of training. As I said earlier, 11 of education day for the employees is quite important. Secondly, you talk of establishing a national RPL center to the tune of around 30 million somewhere in Caltech. What I would like to know is how this is coordinated, because it did indicate that this will not only be for the services center, but it will also involve the other centers as well. How is this coordinated? Do you have a buy-in from the other centers? And lastly, on this center, you also target to support around 300 enterprise development. How will these be identified? The energy sector. You receive a qualified and qualified audit for being fine. Are you going to get clean audit ever? Your legal fees seems to be increasing from 2.2 million 2016-17 to 1.1 million. Are you interested? That's what I would like to know. Now for the local government sector, well, I'm glad that the chairperson mentioned the municipality that I come from, at least. At least that shows that you move around in municipalities. But you will also agree with me that the municipality that you have mentioned, there were a lot of service delivery props in the past, and probably as you visited that municipality, you will probably have come across that and the reasons for that. But then, and possibly you probably prioritize them and find better ways of assisting them so that they are able to deliver on the service. But then what I would like to know from you is what impact does the high turnover of councillors, the return of every 5 years of 67% had on service delivery? Because it would seem to me train and empower only for those people to be deposed at the end of the term, and that obviously should be having a negative impact on service delivery. Again, on slide 28, you spoke of the 1,500 employees, particularly adults, that was not achieved, perhaps due to high drop out of uncontrolled learners because they do not, as I said, receive a stipend. What I want to know is what influence will this have on learners in the community, education and training who attend IELTS without receiving stipend? Will this not create an expectation from all learners in the IELTS or a program to only attend courses when they are provided with stipends? And finally, what is development support will the LGC provide to those municipalities that have been consistently underperforming? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question would be directed to the energy and water sector. Just wanted to establish, you mentioned that you will target unemployed to be awarded bursaries for training and learnerships and skills programs, etc. Can you perhaps tell us how did you determine your baseline, your numbers that you've identified? Because obviously we need to determine at a particular point what is the need out there, that you conduct any sort of analysis, do you have the figures, and how did you do that? Secondly, what would be the criteria that you will utilize to select people into the program? Then you speak of Operation Pakisa and the need to develop people to serve in the oil and gas industry for energy. Now, what skills are you targeting in your APP to support this policy? Can you perhaps be specific about that? And also as far as the future skills on nuclear are concerned. Now, unfortunately, we've lost, I believe, some scientific people who moved away when we decided to close down our sort of nuclear energy requirements, I think about 10 years ago. So where do we start again to pick up whatever we've lost? How do you target? Then, Chairperson, I would like also to know, we see that there's increased spending predicted on legal costs. from 2.2 million in 2016-17, and it's now going to go up to 5.1 million in 2017-18. What is the information that we need to have? Why did you make provision for such an increase? And then, can you please tell us, are there departments that are defaulted and not paying the levy? Please let us know so that we can follow up to make sure that you receive the necessary levy funds. LGCETA, just first of all, I think what I want to commend them on is the fact that they are building in-house capacity chairperson. It is important because any institution that relies on outsourcing in the long run is not supposed to exist. We need to build the capacity in-house. Otherwise, you have no credibility to go out there and train other people if you don't have in-house knowledge yourself. So just by way of statement, and I think that's very important. Secondly, I understand your dilemma around the unemployed. Is the entrance not perhaps through ward committee? Although that in itself could also present a specific dilemma, but at least if there is a sort of a more objective forum and it's not for the interest of incumbents specifically in office, then it is important that you spread the opportunity. So have you considered that? Maybe you have. Can you tell us about that? And then, this is maybe a little naughty, but will you also have a conflict management program for some councils, for instance, Nelson Mandela Bay, where you have a conflict between the mayor and the deputy? Do you have such training for councillors as well?
My own sense, the system has been there for a long years ago. I mean, when I was there are ongoing discussions. And the big problem there is that there's been failure to identify areas of strategic intervention. Not enough, I mean, there's no sense to me where are they. Then we have an end point. Then you can say, you know, we are now in 2017. By 2020, the system shall have assisted country to achieve the following. So it sounds that systems are basically like NGOs. They change their goals as they go along. It's a big problem. This is an issue that I think we need to that. So that's the first point I want to do. And the broader strategic direction. There must be a plan of some kind. And then you say, this is what we're doing to make sure that the plan is clear. And I think that capacity is there. I look across the room and I see some people. I services. The mention there of health care. Something like that I get immediately. But I don't know what it is. Because one of the problems in the country is that areas such as DLS, I preserve of a few organizations. There is voice now. And there's no one who's making it into the areas, making progress, etc. So when you say you are doing work on real estate, what is that? One of the issues that has been raised over the years is the whole question of vocational training. What is this training?
Where is that training?
And all the time I spoke about I would just like to know, I mean, what specific work is being done. Because if you look at just as an example, in the area of house and the building of houses in rural areas, once there are a lot of people who are building their own houses, but there's no sense that this training reinforces ongoing work. It also gets me the broader issue of the plan that I talked about. And then on energy, now if you look at your strategic goals, I didn't do the talking for one year. There's this whole thing about of. Now this is supposed to be something called thing. Attracting right. Attracting right people is what we do. Ordinarily and normal in an organization. Now also this kind of things are easy to do. This is an experience. I don't know what this is like. My own experience is that managers are very keen to on performance, to set very easy goals. You'll be surprised, I think, in an organization. When they talk about the performance, they say, we'll have so many workshops. So we'll have so many meetings. Now, a meeting can't be performance tax or a workshop or any of these kinds of things. Because performance management is really meant to ensure that the organization takes a different approach and does things that will ensure that the real meaningful impact made on the area of work in which they are involved. So that kind of thing, I'll be very sure there. in general, I think that one can say, one acknowledges that there is an attempt to information available to the report. One appreciates it. But I think that from where we're supposed to be, in addition to the plans and so on, is more complicated. I think it's an issue that needs to be classified and require more.
thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me appreciate all the presentation that they made here with all the sitters. I will start with the service sitter, and I will be more on the key board projects on the rural development. I see you've got this key board projects in the traditional council at Mafese, Apasha Traditional Council, and those areas are in Limpopo, I know. And then I just want to check with other traditional councils in other provinces. Are you getting there? How far are you in other provinces? Then I'll proceed to the energy and water sector. The Department of Water and Sanitation has a project called War on Water Leaks. And the president on his own announced that you'll be training the youth on this project. What skill program collaboration does the CETA have with the Department of Water and Sanitation Skills Program to support the War on Water Leaks project? And how many youth have you already trained on that? And another one, I'll go to the Auditor General's report, where he highlighted on the matter that the CETA is lacking capacity in terms of skills and knowledge of the finance staff. Have you addressed that challenge already? I'm interested in knowing whether those staff, I'm interested in their qualifications. And another one, again, still on the energy and water sector. You have increased your allocation for spending on the legal fees. It is from 2.2 million in 2016-17 to 5.0 million in 2017-18. What is necessitating this increase? Lastly, we often hear sitters complaining that departments are not complying in terms of the 1% state the levy payments. I just want to check with you whether you've got this challenge, whether the departments are not complying with those levies payments. And then with LG CETA, I am just appreciating that you really training the counselors. We all know that some of the counselors do not have qualifications. You are taking them through training them, training the unions, because these things of unrest, it is because of them not having the knowledge, especially the unions. And again, the officials in the finances and technical, those critical departments. I just want to check with you, how many graduates I'm interested in the throughput rate, whether there is a value for money. Do you train them, and then how many graduates do you have? If you can just give me the rate in which you get those throughput rates. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I must echo the sentiments
of one of the members that obviously speaks onto the role of the CETAs and their particular purpose. And it is common cause that we find ourselves during a critical time in the country in which we lack skills, where more than 5 million young people are not in education, employment, or training. And so when we remove and with the engagements that we have with strategic documents, we need to take into account what critical role we play to reverse not only the legacy of the past, but to ensure that we have power, particularly young people who are going to be running this country, but also those who are not in employment and what we can do to find ourselves. And so obviously for the last few years, CETAs have found themselves in challenges. It is very devastating to hear that one of the biggest CETAs was under administration. But I must appreciate the efforts made, Chairperson, thus far, and the progress we've seen with the particular report. But I think, if being honest, there's much that still remains to be done. And so we need to be honest with ourselves and say, what solutions could we propose to the table to ensure that CETAs are firstly effective and that they also ensure that strategically their purpose is fulfilled and that we are very much far as a country when it comes to our training and the necessary skills we need to progress. And so I just want to ask the service CETA just a few questions in terms of the increasing FET participation. You would find that when you look into our TVET colleges and institutions of training, our curriculums are outdated and they don't cater to the skills that are required by the workforce. So how do you ensure that there's a relationship between a particular CETA and the students that we are training to ensure that once they leave the institution, they're not only sitting at home but can effectively contribute to the economy? And secondly, there's a challenge of learners that you've alluded to who change courses. Now, I think throughout the CETAs as well, how can we inspire and give passion to those students who are in those particular CETAs so that they don't continuously change courses, which obviously charge money within that particular CETA, but they're passionate, they're dedicated, as we've seen when we went to oversight visit with the Agri CETA, how those students are genuinely passionate about agriculture and they have innovative ideas to change it. So how do we inspire and how do we retain those particular graduates? And also in terms of collaborations within the respective CETAs, because I'm not hearing that there's any collaboration amongst us to say, if I'm in labor, how do I bring the particular services so that we can work together? Because some issues you might not be able to address adequately, but another CETA could be able to assist you. Perhaps you can look at the relations between the respective CETAs, and maybe the department can also contribute how they're playing a role in ensuring that there is collaboration and that our CETAs are effectively functioning and they work together. Because if you think about it, we've got 21. We can actually cut that down to far less the number if we had proper collaboration and constructive engagements with them. In terms of the energy CETA, they've been getting unqualified audits. And I also just want to ask to say, what can we do to ensure that we curb whatever challenges you're facing that are deterring you from getting a clean audit? And secondly, what proposals or how are we ensuring that our CETA effectively responds to the challenges in the country? I make an example in the Western Cape, there's particularly a drought. What are we doing as a CETA? How are we equipping those who are training to respond to the social ills of our nation so that we're actually very practical and on the ground? And also, you're the only CETA that mentioned support for the missing middle. And I must appreciate that. And I want to challenge other CETAs as well to say, can we progressively move from not only support for the poor, but to say, what do we do for the missing middle? Because that's how we can be able to also curb the challenges of FISMA's role and the issues raised by students on the ground. The local government CETA, I just want to ask, maybe you mentioned the issue of being unable to engage or enter in particular provinces, and one member has given us a proposal in that regard, but I just want to maybe give a proper breakdown of the targets you have within those respective provinces so that whatever powers or roles we have or relationships we have, we can actually go down to them and engage with them properly, having seen that these are the targets and this is what we want to achieve. And also, what skills development support will you be providing for those particular municipalities so that you are very aware what it is that we're bringing and what are their challenges and what skills that they require so that we can move effectively? I think Chairperson, I'll stop my ring there.
Chair? Well, as I see it, there are two dangers of CETAs. The one is, well, there are three, actually. The one is mission creep, which we do see in at least two of the CETAs today. The second one is patronage, which I do detect again today. And the third one is a certification syndrome, Mission creep I see in particularly in SAS-CETA, which appears to be, but also in the energy sector, which appear to be doing all sorts of things which don't seem to be directly related to producing skills. Then, as far as patronage is concerned, it's extremely worrying that a target is how many NGOs or how many community organizations you support. That is clear patronage. The target should be how many students you produce, not how many organizations you support. CETAs are not there to support NGOs. They are not there to develop SMMEs. They are there to produce students, graduates of courses. And I do think that that's mission creep, and you see it in several CETAs, where they think supporting SMMEs, they are a kind of BEE outfit whose job is to support SMMEs and make them develop and grow. And then the last one is the certification syndrome, which was alluded to by one of the CETAs, which is where students come in and get their little certificate in, I don't know, sweeping the floor. Then they go to another CETA and get a certificate in putting water bottles out for meetings. And then they go to another CETA and get a certificate in something else equally small and insignificant. And what you've seen there is partly students just chasing the money, because each time they get a certificate, they get money for it, and also partly the meaninglessness of some of the certificates that seem to be offered, which is linked to the patronage. Because I cannot credit that out of 300 organizations targeted by the services CETA, all of them are able to offer viable, creditable, QCTO-accredited qualifications. I would bet that most of those 300 are offering very, very short, very, very insignificant certificates, which are not properly accredited. My next point is related to the boards. Now, one of the CETAs complained that industry does not take part in the training of skills, and I agree that this is a very serious problem. But we have never seen, when a board has come here, we've never seen members of industry on the board or chairs of the board. CETAs seem to operate completely outside of the range of industry, and they don't seem to include them in their activities, and then they're surprised when industry doesn't respond. My recommendation would be make half the chairs of your board from industry. Put them on your board, people from industry, and make sure that you get that connection right at the heart of what you do. It was good to see the LGC saying that they were going to be looking at whether or not their activities have impact. Is there actually an improvement in local government as a result of the input of a local government CETA? That, in a way, should be part of the performance of every CETA. Are they having an impact? It would certainly get rid of the certification syndrome phenomenon. And then I'd like to recommend, require, as a member of this committee, that each CETA, in its performance, in its target, include a dashboard that dashboard should be only related to numbers of graduates of particular courses produced. What I'd like to see is this dashboard as follows: number of students registered in what qualifications, numbers of students registered in workplace-based training, numbers of students who then drop out, numbers of students who are certificated by QCTO-certified qualifications, numbers of students who are certificated by non-QCTO qualifications, impact assessment, which would be something like improvement in work conditions or new jobs obtained by the graduates, and then the costs of this per student. Now, if you have a dashboard like that and you say that's your primary job, is to fulfill the requirements of that dashboard, a lot of the mission creep will go away. because you will then start orientating everything you do, and there's lots to do in a CETA. I'm not saying it's only training. But everything you'll do will be orientated towards making sure that you produce properly qualified students in good numbers at good institutions that are certified in qualifications that get them somewhere. And we see these kinds of figures in the TLET when they report to us, and we see them in the university when they report us. But we are not seeing them for you. All you report on is the numbers of students registered for courses. You never tell us what proportion of those registered complete, what the throughput rate is, and what they end up doing. And so we don't really know. All we know is that you're giving out a lot of money to people to do courses, but we have no idea what's happened to them. And also, we have no way of measuring the quality of those courses. So if we could make sure that future CETA documents have those dashboards, or if even we could request CETA to all present us with their dashboard for this year, I would really appreciate that if the department could organize that so we can start looking at it. And they won't be perfect at first. They will be, you know, difficult things to compile. But once you do it every year, you can then start tracking your performance over time, and you will give us a better tool to analyze what you do. Thank you.
That all of you made on your stress plan and on your budget moving forward between 2017 to 2019, and having come from 2014 and where we are at now, because I think that's really what we are dealing with here, not the annual report where you have to do all of these other things, it's the plan moving forward to say what it is that you are going to do. So I think the committee will judge you on this plan moving forward, and when we have an opportunity to judge what you have set in your strat plan and your budget, we will see in your annual report from the department, Deputy Minister, and themselves, we'll see whether indeed you have lived up to that which you have asked. And that's where your dashboards belong, to see whether you have done those kind of things. I want to ask to the department and perhaps to the CETA, and I'll use the example of the real estate again. How do you finally decide on who you put together in one CETA? So real estate is in services for what reason? Why not in local government, because they're more housing than anything else. A real estate with a hairdresser next to it, appreciative of the skills that hairdressers also have, because they too make a contribution to the economy, just like the sweeper make a contribution to the economy. Because if we don't have clean cleanliness around us, we'll have decay, and your economy can also be affected with that. So how do you decide to bring in, isn't there a good case to be made here? To you know, something like that really can benefit more than anything else. I'm asking this because I know that the, what is the name of the board that deals with real estate? There we go. They deal extensively with training. They have undertaken a program to transform the sector, because the sector is extremely dominated by white people, and the interest of black people in real estate is not there, and there's a big barrier that is there to allow some people in. There's lots of collusion, lots of friendly agreements, and so on. So I built my case around that, because you will then see that the finances that they would be spending in there and what you perhaps are doing might and can be overlapping. I was in human settlements, that's why I know that obviously dealt quite a bit with it. So how do you decide? Deputy Minister, the issue of unemployment is an overarching problem amongst the CITES, the colleges, the universities, everyone else. I think maybe we should step outside of the realm to really think that the CITES are going to overcome all the unemployment by themselves in the country. So please let me know. That doesn't mean that they need to make a much bigger contribution in the how, the where, and what it is that we would like to achieve. So the question is, your contribution is driven by what? So if you go to the OR Tambo district, do you know in the OR Tambo district whether they are the district in the country working together with the local government system? Are the districts that might be having the highest unemployment in the country, and therefore you would be driven towards that reality because the Stats South Africa would have given you and are giving you continuously those statistics to say what the picture looks like in the country. So how prepared are you to reorganizing yourself to the realities all the time, because in the economy things change quite rapidly. So if you say your strat plan is going to be to have 50,000 people over there and the economy moves this way, then what do you do? So General Motors wants to leave the country. Is CITES going to follow there now, or are they just going to stay? If perhaps, notwithstanding, you know, the national skills development conferences, all of those things, apart from all of those things, maybe the department together with the CITES can tell us just how exactly do they think we need to have a different conversation other than what your strat plan and your budget is saying, to the reality of the fact that everything that you are supposed to do is supposed to be driven by 5% increase as per the National Development Plan. That not being achieved, how do you contribute to us getting to the 5% increase and beyond here on more? My other issue that I want to ask is on the bursaries. Do you think the fact that you have this email that you send out on a regular basis to advertise your bursaries has the desired outcome that you wish to have in relation to just the things that I said now? And that is, so everyone that has access, of course, they will be first there to make the application. So in our Tambo district, that has got the highest unemployment, they're not going to get to your bursaries because of all the reasons that I've cited. So do you wish to make some changes in how all of you do and identify the uptake of your bursaries? The energy sector, we had this problem around Medupi where there were strikes because we did not seem to have particular skills that were set in. Are we at a level now where I still don't believe we don't have those skills up to now? The reasons that were given, I still don't believe it. But to the extent where these big projects that we are having in the built environment and infrastructure, to what extent can we say that South Africans make a first contribution to the big infrastructure rollout in the country? And lastly, I want to say, maybe it will help if you tell us what the content of your training is. Perhaps everyone, but in particular for the councillors. What since last year, after the last elections, there's been a lot of changes. The makeup of the councils are different, the issues are different. You see a lot of conflict to service delivery. But pretty much it's like all the time, you don't get service delivery. Like Parliament, or it's like every 4 o'clock. You don't get delivery, and all that people say outside is we should live also fight like they fight. They change the concept of your society, because they look at Parliament in this instance, or the municipality they look at, because they appreciate those institutions, and then they say if they can do it, we can do it also. We are simply surprised by the escalation of violence in the country. Highest one in the country has not been very calm at all. So what do you train them, and how do you take into consideration this reality that is there, changing nature of very many different things, and how do we make sure that at the end of the day, service delivery is there? It is now 12 o'clock, and between yourselves, I'm going to start with the worst second. I'm going to start with those that have been second to the first. And then I'll go to the service of Peter, and then I'll end up with the local government. And then we ask to end up the local government. I'll remember that I'll face you, I don't want to stretch. I don't want to be accused of.
Thank you, Chair. We have distributed the questions, the answers amongst ourselves. I'll just deal with one question from Honourable Member with regard to target setting. We can assure you, Honourable Member, that the department and the board is very strict insofar as targets are concerned. In fact, in most instances, these are stretch targets. Imposed by the department and the board. At one stage, the department gave us a target of training 900 artisans. Now, clearly what a small city. To train one artisan, it costs you 150,000. We only get 270,000, 270 million. So you need 135 million to train 900. This is a sort of example of tough targets, and these targets are not made for people just to get score them quite easily. Secondly, we have introduced management, performance management system, that all staff members from a cleaner, in a scientific manner, where you have all the responsibility of the individual, the waiting, so you can't guess. Bonus payment can only be paid when you exceed your target. Your normal work, you are paid, you can't get a bonus. So we want to assure you that targets are not easily set. They are really tested for us to perform. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the question of whether we're going to have clean audit this round, I thought I made my input in terms of us really, we're really hoping that we do that this round. And if not for 16-17, it will most certainly be for 17-18. In terms of our legal fees, we had a number of investigations that we had overseas, and we had to use our legal team to assist us in that regard. And that in itself has contributed to our legal fees. When it comes to, we have also went into the purchasing of office building. And in terms of the office building, we had a number of things like your conveyancing part of it, there's a host of finances that went into there. We also utilize from time to time legal opinions as well as utilizing the legal team to assist us, whether it's in the CCMA or in the labor court itself. However, I must say, and the CFO will speak to that, the key here is that what you saw in terms of the 2.5 million plus is really what we forecast, and it may appear, it will appear in our annual report as a contingent liability, simply because the key here is we have done a thorough process of reviewing contracts that we have for service providers, including colleges and universities, to see whether they really deliver on this. And we gave an opportunity to respond to us to say, give us a sense why you guys feel that you should proceed with this, because we gave you the money, the board approved this thing 6 months ago, a year ago, sometimes longer, and we just don't see traction. So provide us with the reason why we can't remove the contract and close it. Many instances, we took the action and we closed it. And we see that as the legal teams of those entities and institutions coming back at us to argue us into it. So we have projected that there would be a legal impact in terms of cost when it gets to the contract that we have cancelled. I've requested the CEO after me respond to Honourable Member Killian on the will target the unemployed issue and the baseline in terms of how we analyze and the criteria we select. But just for me to say that when the President announced, or rather started to plan around Operation Pakisa, it was the Department of Higher Education that got the, there were 11 streams, that got the stream to oversee and drive the stream of student development. And because this is in the shipbuilding, you know, economy, oil and gas space, there were 4 CETAs that were identified by the Department of Education to form part of a structure under Dr. Flores, the principal, to look at what would be the rollout and how in terms of responding to operations. It was CHIETA, Chemical CHIETA, Transport, the CETA, and ourselves. And so within that context, at that structure, that's where they determine what the skills needs are, the analysis, the research has been done in that regard. We took a step further, whereby we funding will be the research chair at Nelson Mandela University. The co-funding with Transport and Masita, the package of that research chair. And the research chair sits in the offices of the African Industry, or the African Institute for Maritime Industry. And so the focus area of that research researcher and that professor is for us to make sure that he does the necessary scanning, research in terms of the skills base and how we take moving forward. As for the skills for nuclear energy, as far as that is concerned, you will agree with me, honorable members, that we will, within, say, by 2020 to 2023, that's roughly a 4-hour projected period for the construction period of the first nuclear project. Now, in order to engage that process and to provide the necessary skills, we will have to train 130 engineers, 130 project managers, looking at 112 scientists, and 2,580 artisans that are trained specifically for the nuclear build. And that's the first one only. And so what the CETA went and did is, as we're engaging the, and it's a very valuable point, on the resources that we had in the former Pelindaba and so on. Not all is lost, because if you go to University of Tshwane University of Technology, for instance, Bob Bonden, them, all those guys are there, and they're part of our structure and our team to determine what would be the skills provision. At the moment, CPUT, I had a meeting on Friday with them, and the head of engineering at the Peninsula University of Technology, for instance, is a key player in that regard in order for us to craft. So with the CETA went out and put out the address for a, and we're doing this in conjunction with the Center for Energy Fund, to appoint a technical advisor to craft for all of us in this space with ESCOM, EWCETA, but because we're the Education Training Authority, we must take the lead in this regard. And so we are appointing then a technical advisor. It could be in the form of university, an individual expert and so on, that will then craft for us a national framework on education training for the nuclear energy space. In the meantime, the capacity sits all over the place, and all we want to do is the existing capacity to pull that together and to see how best we can drive it as an education training authority. I must just say that in terms of the oil and gas, we had engaged the DTI and ourselves through the request from our department that the EWC that works with the Department of Trade and Industry for us to fund what we call training, education and training and skill development for the oil and gas space. So we targeted first Dalgana Bay. We were going back to, we did Kuka last year, and we are on our way to Richards Bay now. Now, when the first initiative, myself and the DG, Director General of the DTI, signed a protocol agreement that because the IDZ and the management company in the IDZ is part of the DTI as a shareholding department, that they will, the department will transfer, appoint us as a CETA, as the implementing agent for education and training, and they will then transfer the money to the coffers of the management company within the Saldanha IDZ. We went out there, we sponsored this summit for skills development within Saldanha, opened by the Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry, closed by the Deputy Minister for Higher Education and Training. Once the money was transferred to the management company in the Saldanha IDZ, we never saw any traction after that. We never saw any movement in that. So I can't confidently tell this esteemed house as to whether the Saldanha IDZ managed to roll out skill development as been planned by us initially. So in terms of the, just another question of Honorable Killian, is Department of Defaulters and who are they and tell us. Fortunately for us, we are working with Department of Water and Sanitation and Department of Energy. And they are not defaulting, they pay us, so we don't have any name to report to you. But if they pull the plug on us, we know where to come. Honorable Masonda, the issue of attracting the right people, how can that be a strategic goal? We've crafted our strategic goals and developed them into four programs that we fund and that we drive. And so as we indicated, that the program number one is the administration. Now your resource base, the quality of people, the competency levels that you bring into your organization is for us extremely strategic. In the sense that you don't have the right CFO, you don't have the right COO, you don't have the right executive or HR manager, it's an issue for us. So both the attraction and the retention for us to ensure stability in your machinery is critical for us, and that's why we regard it as strategic. The honourable member who spoke on the War on Drugs collaboration with the TWS, we have signed an implementation program for myself and the former director general with the CEO of Randwater, document that we refer to as the implementation protocol that is crafted by us but stipulates clearly the role and responsibility of each accounting officer. There are, in the document, allowances made for deputy ministers under the chair of Deputy Minister to provide the political oversight. But as far as the reporting is concerned, the chief executive officers, or rather the accounting officers, are the ones who must report to them, and below that we've got a technical task team that drives this, and heading that technical task team is the program manager in the Department of Water and Sanitation, is the program manager in Rainwater, and is the chief operations officer of the EWC. So they drive their team at the level of the task team, and they provide us with the necessary planning, reporting, and keeping us up to date. So the collaboration in that regard is strengthened, or rather captured within that protocol agreement. The detail of that, the one leaks in terms of how many trained and so forth, I will leave to the COO also to reflect. But just to say that phase one, that was led to August of 2015, we had to train 3,000. The intake of the next phase of the 7,000 has happened, and we are quite on our way in terms of moving forward with that. So currently, we are training 10,000, and the last intake in terms of phase three will then be $5,000 learners. And may I just add that these learners are both artisans with a strong emphasis on numbers, but also water agents. Because we must accept that in terms of our community's literacy levels in terms of water preservation and conservation, and use and reuse, we must take responsibility to provide the information sharing as well as the education of them. And so our water agents have become what we refer to as our water ambassadors in communities. It's just that we really need local government to assist us. There are many of these hotels who are also culprits, because you go into a hotel room and then you want to shave in the morning and you see the water slip through this thing all the time. It's not holding the water. You report it to the GM and they don't respond. So we're looking at a very comprehensive program under the Deputy Minister, Tweke Manana, to address even tourism, municipalities, and a number of other departments such as basic education and health. As far as the next member who spoke of SICA collaboration, there's very vibrant collaboration projects and efforts. We have organized ourselves in the SICA CEO's Forum, and this is very high up on our agenda. But just to say that between ourselves and the INSITA, Insurance SICA, for instance, we've signed with them and the Institute of Plumber South Africa a program that we will train 1,000+ artisans that will drive the solar heating systems on some of these houses. Because the insurance companies and the banks, they need that kind of skill, and INSITA wants to provide it, but they can't do it without us. So we do their collaboration in that regard. In terms of qualification development, when it comes to plumbing and electrical, we are working very close with the construction sector in terms of driving that particular process. The list is long. My chairperson made mention earlier of the rural and township economy revitalization program. That's in the inter-SICA initiative as well. Well, there was a question of how do we get a clean audit. I was fortunate enough that we managed now to finally appoint a very, very competent chief operations officer and a very competent CFO. So just as you said earlier on the chairperson, that you would like to see that CFO perform in this house, I also make available the CFO, a lady, a black lady, who's a very, very young and esteemed and qualified professional that we've appointed as CFO of the LBC. So between the three of us, that clean audit you're looking for, we're looking very hard at it now, and it should be there on your desk, Mr. Luca, very, very soon. How do we support the child in the Western Cape? You know, February of 2013, I took a document to my board, and I said, look, the minister, one of the board members from industry, wanted us to take 100 million and go and invest, we'll make good return. The other board members from labor said, but we're not an investing company. We are here to deliver on skill development. And so the key then was that they threw it back at me and said, how do you utilize this money sitting there in the council? The then chairperson said to me, bring us a document. Same time as that, during 2012, the Minister of Education Training was very strong on the issue of how do we capacitate and develop public institutions, public colleges, universities, University of Technology, and so on. And we have then gone to back to the board to submit to them a document that covers 140 million rand at the time. What a lot of money, and I'm sure the civil sector would look at us and say, what are you talking about? But we have committed that kind of money. The largest amount of money we committed during the 28th February 2013 was committed to the Western Cape, Cape Town College, University of Stellenbosch, the Northlink Tibet College, the West Coast College, and even the one Sunday. And I got flagged from my board, why do you run with this thing to the Western Cape? I said, well, we threw this thing out on our roadshows, and these guys responded first with their proposals and the documentation, and what did I have to do? I ran out of time. So we're taking the corners of our country. We have obviously surpassed that now in terms of finding a balance, but we have really made sure that the child, even in the Western Cape, benefits extensively from our initiatives and our efforts. Mission three. I'm not so sure if we have any statistics on mission three. But what I do know is that there is a need for a robust process whereby we do thorough alignment on the seat codes and who goes where and which ones belong to each set. There are colleagues, employees that are sitting with seat codes, whether they should be sitting with another seat codes because of the sector that they serve. Who's going to do that exercise, when and where, I don't know. But the seat codes environment is a dire need of that exercise. But what I must say, though, is when the issue came up of the equality of qualifications, that is meaningless under the issue of certification syndrome. The Minister of Higher Education, after he pronounced on, he did a number of things in 2014. One was the program that he launched in November of 2013 on the skills development through and for strategic integrated projects. The Minister of Education also for the first time came and said, gone are the days that any service provider, public or private, come and train short courses that are meaningless. It then came with a very robust initiative that says our focus and the bulk of our money must go into what we refer to as pivotal focus. Pivotal meaning professional, vocational, technical, and academic learning programs. And I can assure you, go through all the sectors right now, the percentage spent on pivotal programs is in the 90-something to the 100%. So the issue of a meaningless certification is, I think, been dealt with for some time now. the other one I will just, the dashboard, we really welcome from the honorable member, and I'm sure I saw when you spoke of the dashboard, my department was smiling. So he's going to come back at us with that dashboard and we'll start working on that as soon as we can. From our side, Chair, just to say that the virtuous committee my chairperson spoke to, touched on that one. Udupi. Udupi is a typical example of not only the nuclear the plant, it was also when we did the World Cup soccer that we have to bring in 2000 to China. When we do the renewal programs in the Northern Cape and elsewhere, we bring a large number of Spanish. And like you have said, you don't believe that we don't have skills. If you look at welding, for instance, it's a particular kind of welding that's needed in some instances, like arc welding and so on. But we've got the basics. It's like the engineering training of an engineer. At some point, the engineer goes and focuses on electrical or civil or construction and so on. So the issue is we have that kind of skills in the country. Madupi for me was more a matter of the challenge of skills is that we have ESMA as our largest employer as a city administrator. And ESCOM pays their levies via SARS to the EWC. When we pay ESCOM 50 million rand plus annually, that we refer to in terms of legislation as a mandatory grant, that is for the training of the staff and the personnel that they need, which they are doing quite well in some instances. In other instances, the challenges are there between labor and management, as, because the labor feels that management is not treating the lower level, skill levels, seriously with that money. Otherwise, some feel that, that's what labor feels. Management feels that it's not altogether true. But we're trying to assist them at this point as an intermediary to see how best they can deal with it. So the money we pay to ESCOM is to really up the skills of the medical programs. We have additional budgets that we have given to TVET colleges in that area to up those skills. So it's really a matter that was managed a little bit comes in the beginning, but I think we turned the corner on that one, especially given the fact that EWC the two piece not our response, but the, the skill that we've got to provide would become ours. I think I'm going to stop this. Just give to my CEO.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I'm just addressing the matter of baseline for unemployed. At the macro level, at the micro level, we are expected to enter into 5-year strategic plans with the Department of Higher Education and Training. That's where we give numbers. But each and every year, we review based on learners entered, learners completed in each and every performance indicator. That's how we come with a with an average, and the numbers are there in terms of the total document, in terms of the 17-18 annual performance plan. Then the question number two was around criteria for selecting bursaries. One, we are expected in terms of the national skills development strategy three to produce a list of critical and scarce skills each and every year. That translates into pivotal skills list. So we look at the pivotal skills list that we're supposed to present earlier. And two, it's regulatory. The National Skills Development Strategy 3, which is the Bible of all CETAs, have got transformational objectives and targets. One, which is to make sure that out of each and every performance indicator, 85% has to be black, 50% has to be female, 5% has to be people with disabilities, and most importantly, that they should be coming from rural dwellings in terms of that. And then for all leaks, I think my CEO has addressed, but in terms of first phase, we have trained 3,000 learners, and second phase, we've just recently registered 7,000 learners in terms of that. I wanted to touch on the matter of not limited only to bursaries, Chairperson, where Ian indicated how do we make sure that we reach out to communities out there, not just for bursaries, but for skills programs and so forth. And we are fortunate that about 2 weeks back, there was a board resolution that we should now start to go out there in media to participate in community structures, regional structures, to make sure that we market the organization where it matters for.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. What we've done is we've consolidated our various inputs, so I'm just going to try and present all of them in response to the questions, and indeed the other colleagues will then amplify where necessary. The question on the low level of education among our staff members, Honorable Chair, is the historical situation, Honorable Member, where before administration, most of our employees were recruited via internship programs, and therefore you would have people coming only with a matric. What was not done thereafter then was to then ensure that there's continuous professional development via formal training for these young people. And so when we arrived, we found that kind of state of affairs. That is why we then made it compulsory for all of them to be registered for further study, and indeed we are funding them fully in terms of that. And it's a situation that we must report is improving by the year as they get better qualifications. With regards to improving the quality of training, one of the things we are doing is addressing accreditation within the CETA. Because CETAs do not provide training themselves. We do it via skills development providers out there, both public and private. And one of the key areas we are focusing on is ensuring that whoever gets accredited, you know, meets all the requirements in terms of the quality required. But we are also focusing on assisting with the provision of quality infrastructure. One of the key reasons we are investing in infrastructure as the services system is really that you go to colleges, for example, TVET colleges, where a learner will come out with a national certificate vocational or native qualification. But when they get to industry, they cannot interface with the realities of those industries simply because most of the training they got was largely theoretical. And so we are trying to equip some of these colleges, for example, with workshops as well as the relevant equipment, so that by the time the learners leave those colleges, they have had very direct contact with the realities from an equipment use point of view, for example, of the industries they are going to. So we are busy investing in that because we believe that's the only way we are really going to improve the quality of provision. Likewise, the question of skills development centers that we are investing in around the country, you find young people in rural areas, for example, who have been trained by us as teachers, but because they are just trained, say, in community halls, you know, they are trained in some instances even in churches and the like, you actually find that the actual practical training with the right equipment has not happened. And so we cannot deprive them of opportunities for quality training. Hence our investment in these skills development centers, so that a learner in a rural area, for example, must receive, you know, a similar quality of training as a learner in the metropolitan areas. So those are some of the ways in which we try to improve the quality of training. With regards to the National RPL Center, indeed we are working with some CETAs, and in this regard, we've got the construction CETA because of the number of trades that it covers, as well as the care CETA. We've got definite agreements with them, and we're working with them in relation to this. With the energy CETA being here, the construction CETA promised us that it would deliver them as far as this collaboration is concerned, because apparently they've got a good relationship between the two currently. The identification of the 300 enterprises to be supported, we work on the basis of priority provinces, which we have identified from the poverty index that we have in the country. And in this regard, we've got Limpopo, the Northwest, the Northern Cape, the Eastern Cape, and the Free State as the key provinces that we focus on. And indeed, the question of a rural bias also comes in as a criterion. Where the real estate industry is concerned and the question of impact therein, I think I should indicate, Honorable Chair, that this one learner, one agency program that is being referred to under the Real Estate Agency Affairs Board is actually funded by us. That entire program, every cent is funded by the services CETA. it doesn't come from the agency affairs, real estate agency affairs board itself or the Department of Human Settlement. This is part of our partnership with them. That total funding came directly from the services sector. And indeed, one of our board members, we are represented by one of our board members on the property sector charter council, which focuses on transformation in this industry. And inputs we get from that council are factored into the work we are doing as far as the real estate industry is concerned. For example, I don't know whether we've just advertised or we're about to advertise a special project focusing on the real estate industry, the property valuation subsector, as well as the auctioneering subsector, to really try and address some of the challenges there. We've ring-fenced some money for that. Where other traditional councils are involved, Honorable Member, you may have noticed that this target is completely new. It has never been there, that of supporting particularly rural projects. We've just been doing it, you know, in a general sense where we say we've got projects in rural areas and so on. But these are targeted projects that we've identified. And besides Mafefe and Hapasha, we've got projects relating to traditional councils in the Eastern Cape. There are four of them: Nweleni, Mpundisweni, Mbashe, and Ncega. And then in KZN, we've got one in Kwatumba. So this is work in progress. By the end of this financial year, we hope we shall have reached many more than those ones. Where our relationship with learners after their sojourn in TVET colleges is concerned, this is addressed mainly via internships, because these learners require, beyond the paper they have, I mean beyond the theoretical training they shall have received in the colleges, before they get their qualifications, they need to have done workplace training. And as CITAS, we address this via internships. When it comes to hopping, learners hopping from one learning pathway to another and from one CITA to another, indeed, the only way we can address this is to have a system where a learner gets recorded, and indeed, if another CITA tries to input that same learner, there should be an indication. This is a system that's currently there, but it seems to me it is not working, because we all put our learners on the SAQA system. But another difficulty here is the whole question of quanta as far as stipends are concerned. Quite often, for example, our learnership stipend is 1,500 a month. And when you go to some area, you are then told that no, you can't have this learnership here because some other city is paying 2,500 a month. And therefore, I think the department has already started a process of trying to standardize the whole question of stipends. And I think that will help to some extent as well to avoid this hopping from one place to another. With regards to collaboration among CITAS, it's a principle that the department articulates very forcefully. And indeed, when it comes to the provision of actual training programs, we enter into MOUs if, for example, we've got learners who we are training who belong to some other CITA in terms of the particular qualification. However, beyond that, indeed, we see this as a rhetorical question, which says we need to do more to avoid some of the duplications that are happening. The question of mission creep has been dealt with I think, quite ably by our colleagues in the energy sector. But insofar as we are then involved in the provision of infrastructure, we are children of our parents. Our parents being our government, and indeed our government being responsible for different types of institutions and so on. And to the extent that for us to deliver on our mandate, there's a requirement for quality infrastructure. We really believe that we've got to do it, particularly in those areas that historically have been ignored in terms of infrastructure for education, which then forces some of these young people to then leave those areas and flock to metropolitan areas, which then leads to other social pathologies and so on, because you then do not have enough facilities in terms of infrastructure even there and so on. So what we are really doing is investing in infrastructure that is going to help us deliver on our mandate. This is not just infrastructure for the sake of infrastructure. And indeed, where NGOs and community-based organizations are concerned and so on, the system we are in is a system that is based on various partnerships, including NGOs and community-based organizations. And indeed, to the extent that they have to help us recruit learners, they have to help us with the training of learners and so on, you typically find that their own capacity is limited. And we cannot therefore just ignore them. We've got to then make sure that to the extent that we can, we invest in their own development so that they can assist us in our delivery of our own mandate. Because that is what we are asking them to do. Help us deliver on our mandate, and therefore it becomes imperative that we assist with their own capacitation so that they can also play their role as members of our society. The question of members of industry on the boards are constituted that way. Half the number of people on the board come from industry, and another half come from the labor component of that very own industry. And therefore, industry participation is not an issue. The real challenge is whether our workplaces are really committed to taking our learners and giving them workplace training with all the weaknesses that our learners have, because indeed, the fact that they are being sent to those workplaces is an admission that part of that learner still requires some further cooking at another level. And indeed, the challenge we have is the responsiveness of our workplaces to accepting our learners. And this goes both ways. I think we need to emphasize that, Honorable Chair, both in the private space and in the public space, where you sometimes have even government departments and some public institutions not absorbing as many learners as they could. Though, of course, on the government front, we must say that it's much better than on the private front. And indeed, we do know, as the energy sector colleagues indicated, that the deputy minister in particular has really been driving this particular process of addressing that challenge.
Shall we end then?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the last speaker, and let's go to the last speaker, and then we'll give the deputy minister a chance to end.
Honourable Chair, as I indicated before the meeting started, we actually participated in a debate and we really have to leave, unfortunately, both Honourable Fuella and myself. So I really regret, we would have loved to hear
the feedback from LGC. Do we understand?
I've also asked if I could apologize.
You also said,
but
why I
very quickly, just three quick issues. I mean, the first is that it might be quite useful that we have a strategic session with this committee and the department looking at our 2018-19 strategy. So we could look at both performance and impact issues and ask that these and whatever other speakers would like in that. Second issue on the conflict issue, we do have a program, a leadership program that we have already used. We're in cooperation with the School of Governance. It's been addressing the issue of particularly roles and responsibilities of mayors, chief whips and speakers on the one hand, and the administration on the other. But certainly we are talking about, in our strategy, looking at the conflict that's now emerged across the country where communities are stopping delivery if they don't like the person who's won the tender. And that's happening on a massive scale. But in addition, not at a political level, but where it's roles and responsibilities, we can deal with that. But Gugu is far better qualified to touch on a few issues. We will provide written responses.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chen. Maybe to just respond very quickly on the matters that have been raised, let me just also apologize for not introducing my two other colleagues. Actually, is Nontle Mashinini. She's responsible for our SSP and all the work that has been done by LGC in relation to the WSP program in particular and the strategy. And next to her is Kulegani Kize, who is our Chief Operating Officer, who has introduced various interventions in our operations, and so he will be responding to the operational matters. I just want to pick on one big area that I think maybe this committee and all our political parties can assist us with, and that is in relation to the councillor program. Last year we began the program by having an induction process where we dealt with the issue relating to the turnover of our councillors and the fact that a lot of them were leaving the local government sector for various reasons. It is a big area of concern for the LG CETA for a number of reasons. First of all, our councillors that are coming in now are much younger, so we have a problem of experience and depth of experience. So if our political parties can assist us to make sure that the kind of cadres that are being deployed in local government are kept within the local government space so that we can retain the depth of knowledge that is there, because we're seeing that as having some way of contributing to the limited exposure as far as service delivery is concerned. Secondly, the profile of our councillors are all new as well to the local government environment. So the problem that again there we're experiencing is that as new as some of these councillors are, some of them unfortunately are not coming to the sessions that we are planning. It's very difficult for me as an official to say to a mayor of a big city, you must come to a training program because they are obviously very busy. But it's critical that they attend some of these sessions because some of them are new in the field and it would add value into their effectiveness. And then the other area, Chair, that is contributing to the service delivery challenges that we are experiencing, and also it relates to the question around the high turnover of our councillors, is that SALGA has just done an analysis of the profile of our councillors across the nation. We are finding that most of them are also less educated. The majority of them are sitting with a less than a matric qualification, which is problematic. We've got a mayor, for instance, in one of the provinces who is a mayor of a major metro, but she has a qualification of less than a standard 8 or grade 12 qualification. So we've got to make sure that we put in place appropriate training mechanisms to assist in that process. So together with SALGA, we've also categorized our councillors from those that have been in the system for a long time, so the kind of training that they need would be different
to a counselor that is new to a counselor that obviously also has a higher level of education. So it is an area where we would really appreciate if in the political parties there could be a conversation around the strengthening of the skills base of our counselors to make sure that they are able to do their work. Certainly, our vision and what we would like to do and what we've presented across the country to the meetings we've been having with the mayors is that we would prefer if they would take up a lot of this training, particularly for the 3-year, 5-year courses that we would like to present to them, so that at the end of their 5-year term, they actually have something, especially those that have no qualification whatsoever, so that when they do, if they exit, they have something that they can fall on, because we also want them to be appropriately capacitated as our leaders inside and outside the institution. I'm going to ask Mr. Mkhize to just touch on the other areas that have been raised and Nonke on the WSC. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. There was a question on, or rather a suggestion on, why does the LGCTA not approach the issue of unemployed via work committees? We welcome and accept that suggestion is something that we are going to consider in our mix in an effort of trying to reach maximum impact. The other question was on on stipend for unemployed IELTS, whether we're not creating a dependency syndrome. As the previous speakers have said, we are working with the National Department of Higher Education and Training, who has embarked on a program of trying to standardize stipend throughout the system, and this features prominently on that. But for us, as an LGCTA, this is a key area in the sense that there is a direct link between adult literacy and the work that we're trying to do on RPM. And we want this program to succeed for that particular reason, and we're looking towards finding a solution. Thank you, Chairperson.
You asked that we, any of the remaining questions,
thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and the different sitters that are here. Chair, no, maybe a couple of issues. And by the way, thank you for granting the three sitters the opportunity to come and present their strategic plans for 2015-16 to 2019-20 and the annual performance plans for 2017-18. Just to respond to Professor Pozzoli, it's a pity that she has left the room. Very quickly, Chair, I know that I have about 2-3 minutes. On the issue of supporting NGOs, cooperatives, and SMEs. Now, as you may be aware, Chair and Honourable Members, this is a goal of the NSF3, and it does really help in getting workplace for trade. So I don't think it can ever be possible, at least not in this current period, to do away with this particular goal. Now, Mr. Mahambi, the Chair of Service Sita, has correctly alluded to the fact that actually in the different boards, and I had Professor Bozolis, she singled out the issue of chairs. Why are we not having chairs from the nurse? Now, a chair can never take a decision without the full complement of the board having agreed on a particular matter. So the chair does not make decision alone, and therefore it should not really worry the honourable member if chairpersons are not really coming from leaders. But they are well represented. We have about six of members on the board representing industry, six union, and then the rest. Now, chair, the last point that I thought I should also mention is, last week, chair, I made a remark and said there is this, notion, narrative, that actually sitters are not doing their work, sitters are corrupt and all of that. But we must understand the role of sitters within a context. Now, sitters facilitate training through funding and accreditation. And obviously, they enlist the services of providers to actually do the training. So it becomes a bit unfair, Chair, to regard sitters as not doing their work. Of course, we have sitters that are still limping, there are still loose ends that we have to tighten. But at times, really, you find that the training providers, and of course there should be monitoring and evaluation and all of that, are the ones who let our young people down and all of that. As well, I mean, you have services sitter here. In 2014, they gave bursaries, they gave NASFAS about 100 million rand. I'm aware that LG CETA gave 50 million rand, Energy Water CETA, to NASFAS for bursaries. So these are the kinds of contributions that they have been making. Some of the students and parents don't even know that actually the money comes from the CETA. So they have been making significant contributions in that regard. But as I add, Chair, I do want to say that I think we have really, insofar as the sitters are concerned, we have moved from that period of great uncertainty. The certainty now on what must happen, what we must do, there is clarity, and as I said, where there are those ends, we may have to tighten those, and we are working hard to do that. But there is great improvement. They are making an even greater impact in skilling our youth and giving them opportunities to acquire skills and education. So I thought I should say that, Chair, and thank you once more for. And I'm sure that as they go back, having had the opportunity to listen to members and get some bit of counsel on how they can improve their systems, they will do so. And as a department, we continue to provide that oversight over the sitters, and we are almost satisfied that the system is indeed taking shape, and that our young people, who in the end must benefit through all these interventions, are getting the kind of skills that we require in order to stimulate the growth of the economy. Of course, industry participation is the greater greater need. We've been making the clarion call for industries to raise CO of energy, what I was saying, and conversations are ongoing with industry on how they can come on board so that they give our young people that workplace exposure that is actually required for them to qualify and become the artisans and many other things. But otherwise, Chair, thank you very much, and apologies for arriving late. I have to start at a cabinet committee meeting. Thank you very much.
We must thank you very much, for coming. We can see the passion in you on the side of the secular city, and we are extremely thankful that you, the second one that you have come to, and at least provide us with some broader program of ways that people are coming. So we appreciate your attendance again today. Allow me again to thank all the speakers that have been here. May we ask you to continue to do what you are supposed to do, and may you continue to get out of ICU or out of administration, because the good ones are always been overshadowed by that. Not see the many change that you bring in many lives when that matter is there. So we appreciate the efforts that are being made, but I think you will understand from us that we will continue to hold you accountable, and we will have rough engagements with you because we think that the country needs that. And many of people out there that requires the teachers to change their lives where they work. That's our responsibility to make sure that that indeed happens. I think it is clarified. This is the HCP and Strat Plan. This is not the annual report where you bring all of those statistics and stuff like that. As the year carries on in your year, we will get to that. But for now, that's not what we will decide. Thank you, Deputy Minister, and some of the speakers that have clarified the thing of the board who serve on there, who are in there, and they are guided by the NSDS in working with SMEs. You can't not work with our people in our communities. And so where they form organizations, where they live, it's not for us to trample on them and to dismiss them, it's for us to give them support them there. Because we have a contract with our people, and it's them that will always assist us to change things and to help government deliver much needed. So we thank you very much, and thank you for coming. We can't always see you as many times as we want to, but we will continue to try and find other ways to do oversight on yourself, because we're not asking you to come to Parliament. But we will engage the honourable members. Thank you to yourself also. I want to suggest not possible to deal with the report now. There's a forum problem also, so it is not possible to deal. I want to ask that you read through the report. If there's anything that you would love to say on the report, please forward that to myself, because I think we should just adopt the report next week. There are very many of them that are still outstanding. But unless you have got any other reason to stay in this room, I want to close this.